listening to the Fantasy Movie League podcast, the free fantasy game for Hollywood. Pick 8 movies for your own fantasy cineplex each week, earn points from real weekend box office results. Compete for free in public leagues or against your friends at fantasymovieleague.com. This is Wednesday, June 15th, 2016, and it's week 4 of the Fantasy Movie League summer season. I'm Pete Johnson, the Fantasy Movie League nerd, and I'm joined by Patrick Reardon, the box office guy. And Patrick, did you look through the looking glass?
I indeed did go through the looking glass, and it salvaged my week. I played 5 screens of it. I struggled a little bit at the top, but thank God I had that. So I gained a little bit of ground. So yeah, looking glass worked out for me this week.
Yeah, I'm starting to get a little bit nervous about our childhood Star Wars photo challenge because I did not do well last week.
But I'm guessing I still have a lot of ground to make up. So like I'm moving my way there. And like as far as the Ewok goes, I believe my mom has found a Dracula, a Jack in the Box, and a Ghostbusters. The Ewok photo has not surfaced yet, but we're working on it.
You know what? I would take a Ghostbusters in lieu of an Ewok. I don't know that we have to take this to a vote of the general populace, but I think people would be down with that.
Okay, if we cannot find the Ewok, then yes, we'll go with the Ghostbusters.
All right. Sounds good. Okay, so as we just mentioned, as I kind of tease here in the opening, best performer last week here for week 3 was Alice Through the Looking Glass. Had a lot of haters going into the week, including me.
It was my bonus pick last week, and I said in my column, I don't feel good about this. Like, I don't think I think it's going to continue to sink, but FML pricing gods made it just so damn reasonable, it was kind of hard to stay away from.
Well, yeah, that's exactly what happened, right? The FML pricing gods do this to us every once in a while, where they'll take a movie that looks like it's terrible and has terrible Rotten Tomatoes reviews, and they'll price it reasonably so that you have to consider it. And in this case, the pros estimated that it would drop roughly 52%. It ended up dropping closer to 50%, so it was even better bargain than the pros estimated. And the comp that I was using was the Lone Ranger. I was expecting a drop of more like 16%. And man, was I wrong about that.
I thought it was a decent comp. It was a big bomb by the same studio, like, you know, same lead actor. Perfectly reasonable, but hey, it worked out for some of us.
Now, Angry Birds almost pulled off Best Performer. There was some kind of flip-flopping of the way the scores worked out, and there was an issue with getting data from ProBoxOffice.com for the official scoring here this week, but eventually it all got worked out Monday evening, and Perfect Cinema ended up being 2 screens of Warcraft, 5 screens of Alice, and 1 of Jungle Book, and 406 people had that. That's a pretty decent number.
That's pretty solid compared to some of the past weeks we've had.
Yeah, it is. Warcraft did slightly better than expected as well. So the expectation, you know, it looked like the way that Thursday number came in, it looked like it might be heading for Thursday for 30 million there for a while. Did you get nervous about that when you saw that?
I probably thought about it for 2 seconds, but I just really had the feeling that was just going to be super front loaded. The people who had to see Warcraft, they went out to see it on Thursday and Friday. I didn't think there was any way that was going to keep up through the weekend. So I'm glad I would have been better off if I had played the Warcraft at the top, but I had a Now You See Me Too and a couple of Me Before You's and all those Alice's. So it worked out. It could have been a little bit better, but I'm not shocked. Warcraft, I had it in like the low to mid 20s, and that's where it ended up.
Now, overall standings, this is now week 4 of 14, so there's plenty of time here for shakeup. But tied for first overall are Chris Jorgensen 81 Cineplex and The Silver Spleen, which I love that one. I'm torn as to whether that's a reference to, like, the Silver Surfer, or is it supposed to be, like, for some reason that conjures up images of Silver Spoons, the really bad Ricky Schroeder 80s sitcom?
I think that was a phenomenal little show, but that's one that doesn't make its way on TV land much. I remember watching it as a little kid when it was on the air and thinking it was good. Something tells me if I were to watch an episode, like, present day, I would be thinking, like, I was a dumb kid.
Yeah, I don't think that holds well. That's just me, but
Alfonso Ribeiro, he hadn't quite hit his stride yet until Fresh Prince. So, and like the only thing is good, you can see a young Alfonso, but the rest of it, I'm sure it feels very dated.
Well, it did give us that. So, if nothing else, now our friends at The View, second week, this will be the third week of that contest going on. Did you happen to take a look at how the ladies of The View are doing?
I did not, but lay it out for me. Did Whoopi make a comeback this week?
Whoopi's still bringing up the rear. She's still at $118 million bringing up the rear, but she made a big charge last year. during the last view contest and ended up taking it amongst the hosts. Joy, Candace, and Raven are all at 143 million in change. So that, again, not an insurmountable lead. You can make that up with a couple of wise choices.
Now I'm keeping my eyes on Whoopi. Like, she's playing possum. We've seen this before.
Now, leading the contest, that'll get you a trip to the Peach Dragon premiere here later in the summer, is BWOT. I have no idea what that's supposed to stand for, but I'm really intrigued by it. Has 209 million in change. Backseat Directing, I like that one. 203 million, 892, and tied also for second. A friend of the program, B.S. White, 1970. Nixon, Paradise Falls, and Sucky Sucky Simplex. Sucky, not so bad, I think.
I'm guessing that's a Full Metal Jacket reference, but, you know, like, for the youngsters out there, like, wait till you're old enough to see that, but a lot of us will get that.
Now, it's still early in the Bourne contest.
Oh, and just very quickly, just going back to the previous contest, yeah. I don't know if you got a chance to see the Pete's Dragon trailer. They released a new one this week,
no,
and it didn't look bad. I wasn't super excited about it. It looks all right.
See, I remember when the original one came out, and I was psyched to see that, if for no other reason that my name was in the title. That movie came out when I was like 8, 9 years old, and that was a pretty big deal to me. And the original is just okay, I think. I mean, it holds your attention, but it's not super memorable. So I think this is one they got a good shot at making a good remake of this.
There was a teen sex comedy in the late 80s. I don't know if you remember it. It was River Phoenix starring in, I think it was The Life of Jimmy Reardon, which I was intrigued to see just because it had my last name in the title. And to this day, I've actually never seen it, believe it or not. I was too young at the time.
Well, there you go. So our second contest that we have going on right now is the Jason Bourne premiere. This is a much shorter contest, so only 4 weeks to this one. We just completed the first week. Whole bunch of people at 94 million and change who got Perfect Cinema for that one. So, you know, in that one, because the length of that contest is so short, you might make some different choices there than you might make for some of the other leagues that are longer. It kind of it rewards risk-taking, I think. What are your thoughts on that?
Again, if there's like a typical lineup that everybody's going to play, or there's kind of like a clear path, well, there's never 100% clear path, but you can kind of see the way the wind's blowing some weeks, and that you're going to be tied with everybody else. But if you really like want to go for it, I think sometimes like one of these weeks you're going to have to take a risk. And I think once we get to our new releases later, there's really like there's two paths to go down. One of them's a little riskier. One of them's more of a sure thing. So I'm like, yeah, I'd see how it plays out. But yeah, I think you definitely got to take some chances in a short contest.
Now, the other thing that you've been managing here lately has been the brackets. That's been a lot of fun. We just concluded one last week, and we're in the middle of a new one this week. What do you tell us about that?
Well, it's a huge like difference in terms of quality of the films. Last week was video games. This week's Pixar. Look, video game, something had to win best movie adapted from a video game. Resident Evil took down Tomb Raider, but like, let's be honest, there were very few good movies there. Something had to win. Congratulations, Resident Evil. I guess you won that one. But this week we're doing Pixar movies, which is kind of perfect because there's 16 of them eligible. So nothing gets left out. And once you get past The Good Dinosaur and Cars 2, really very few, if any, other bad movies in the Pixar canon. And so a lot of good movies went out in like the first round, and like people have like really been pushing their favorites on the chatter and have been outraged when movies have been eliminated. So this one's been a lot of fun.
Well, that's exactly what that whole thing has been meant to do. And how many more do you have in the queue, or are you looking for more suggestions?
Oh, always looking for more suggestions. Like, you know, this week there's a couple of potential ideas, and we've got a really big Spielberg one in 2 weeks to go with the BFG, which is going to be very, very cool. So, yeah, but definitely open to suggestions, and we're down to our final four right now. We've got Toy Story is currently beating up, and The Incredibles and Finding Nemo on the other side of the bracket are incredibly close. That one's totally up for grabs.
Yeah, that one's tough because Toy Story, it's hard to argue against the original, but if you don't cry in the first 20 minutes of Up, you have no soul.
The beginning of Up is like, that's the reason it's playing in the final four right now. Like, if for no other reason, like just the beginning of that movie is maybe some of the best stuff Pixar's done.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the Spielberg one will be pretty cool coming up here because there's kind of super nerdy sci-fi Spielberg, and there's super serious, I want to curl up into a ball and cry kind of Spielberg. So that'll be interesting.
And he's directed 28 movies, so I think four of them are going to get first round buys. So we're looking at a 32 movie Spielberg bracket.
I like it.
Yes.
Very, very cool. Well, there's two other things going on that are player created content that I want to point out. So Ari's running his Hall of Fame voting right now. Find that in the chatter. He's got a comprehensive nomination and voting system for putting movies into the Fantasy Movie League Hall of Fame. And then the one that I've been partaking in has been the World Cup, and I am sad to say that World Cup career is over. So the whole point of structuring...
So you're like the United States.
Oh, man, yeah, it got really bad. So the whole point of doing it World Cup style, as we heard last week from 20th Century Flops, was to make it so that you didn't get eliminated in the first week and then you're not engaged with the rest of it. So there's 40 teams, so 10 different groups, four teams each. Each team has 4 to 5 people on it. So there's quite a few people playing. And yeah, so my team, which was supposed to be heavily loaded, including me, the Sandlot, Trent, and Austin Byers Club, we went 0-2 in the first 2 weeks and in such a way that we now are eliminated from advancing beyond group play. So
that's pretty harsh.
I know. It's really harsh. But there's a lot of fun being that's going on there. You can go to it gets mentioned in the main chatter, and I think they're still letting just about anybody who wants to get into the World Cup league, so you can see the chatter going on there. Guys did a great job at setting up all kinds of statistics, so you can see who's doing what in the group play with the standings and overall scores, and so there's some really cool things going on there. I think it'll grow that next time they want to do it here again for the fall season, and there, if my math is right, there might even be room to do a second in the summer season if there's enough. Depends on how long that bracket runs, but
I'd like always, it because, you know, I'm getting ready for a World Cup, like, you know, fall season. Like, I'd love for somebody to get another one going for the summer so I don't miss out on this one.
Well, always cool to see player-created content that really shows you how much people really like this game and how much fun it can be with some of this side stuff. So kudos to those guys who put that together. And
always amazes me the users, the amount of time and creativity they put in. Like, that's what makes the game super cool.
Well, you know what else is super cool? Is we're still sponsored by our friends at Loot Crate.
We haven't scared them away yet. They are still our sponsor, and I think they're pretty pleased.
So Loot Crate, if you haven't heard of this before, if you're a fresh listener to the podcast, Loot Crate is a monthly subscription service where you go to www.lootcrate.com/FML. You sign up. It's like $20 a month. You get 6 to 8 items of licensed gear, apparel, collectibles, unique one-of-a-kind items sent to you. It tends to be like gamer stuff and pop culture gear. You're always guaranteed a t-shirt. And as Patrick has mentioned on previous podcasts, if you get a group of people together, you can sort of trade stuff. If you get something you don't like, you can trade it with a friend that's getting something else. Typically, the way this works is for each month, you have until the 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific to subscribe and get that month's crate. And then when you get that cutoff happened, you have to sort of wait until the next month. So head on over to www.lootcrate.com/FML, and you can still get in for this month, month of June. Now, this week on the podcast, we kind of return to what I think was your favorite theme of podcast interviews. For Mother's Day, we had my mom on. And
I'm thoroughly enjoying the Johnson family.
And so this week, we've got a little bit more than just my dad. So let's take a listen to how that interview ended up going. Okay, so we've got Father's Day this week, and not only do I have a father, but I am a father. And given the popularity of having my mom on for Mother's Day, is actually my daughter's idea that we have both my dad and her at the same time here on the podcast. So thank you both for joining me today.
You're welcome.
It's a good idea.
So, Dad, I'm going to start with you. So I'm not going to say your age. I know you don't like that, but it's fair to say that you are a baby boomer. Is this correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So when you were a young boy, you've told me this before, what was the most popular way that you experienced entertainment in your home when you were a boy?
We had a very small black and white TV. And in fact, the picture was so small, they sold giant magnifying glasses that sat on a stand so you could put it in front of the TV so the picture would be a little bigger.
I remember seeing those. But you spent a lot of time listening to radio as well, right?
Oh, yes. Yes. In fact, even now, I like to go online and listen to old radio shows because they remind me of what I did as a kid.
Give me some examples of some names there that people might know.
Bulldog Drummond, Charlie Chan.
Yeah, I said ones people would know, Dad.
Oh, the Bob Hope Show.
There you go. Okay, I think everybody, Bob Hope is solidly in everyone's wheelhouse. I like that.
Yes.
So lots of radio. But then movies were still obviously accessible when you were a kid in the 50s and 60s. And there's one venue in particular that I want to ask you about. So when the studio system was still sort of in its waning days, there were all the theaters on Hollywood Boulevard, including the Chinese Theater, the Egyptian Theater that's still there, the El Capitan. But the one a little bit down the street we've all spent some time in more recently. Tell me about seeing movies at the Pantages.
I remember the big thing in high school for a big date is you'd go to Grauman's Chinese Theater. That was the big thing to go do.
Okay, so that's on me because maybe it was wishful thinking that it was at the Pantages. But these were much bigger venues than we have today, right? This was like 1,000, 1,500 people watching a movie at once?
Oh, yes. These were big deals.
And what are some things you remember seeing there at the Chinese Theater?
Ben-Hur and Spartacus. That was those kind of movies were big when I was in high school. So I went and saw both those.
Yeah, my daughter is looking at me right now like, is he making that up? Are those real movies? You are, right?
Those are
yeah,
real movies.
Much.
Okay, so let's flip this the other way. So, movies for you, my
yes,
daughter.
Yes.
So, what was the last movie you saw in the theater? You and I went to something a couple of weeks ago.
Yes, we did. We saw Captain America: Civil War.
And before that, what was the last movie you saw with a friend?
I went with my best friend and we saw the last Hunger Games movie.
Right, so that was back in the fall. So
your
movie going is about in sync with mine, where it's not as often as some other people.
Exactly.
You and I attend a lot of live theater together.
Yes, we do.
Now, finding out about what movies to see, what's your go-to social media platform?
My personal go-to social media platform is Instagram.
Now, why Instagram versus, say, Facebook or Twitter or some of the others?
Okay, well, basically, Instagram you can access directly from your phone, which basically I take everywhere, so I can, whenever I'm bored, I can just pull it out. It's really easy to access, it's really easy to make an account, and you can just kind of scroll up on your screen to see what people are posting about and see what people are saying about things in general.
No, is there something specific about the way Instagram does things? Because you have mobile access to, say, Twitter or Facebook. But is it because that's what all your friends are on? Is it sort of that's where the...
Yeah, I mean, that's the only... So because I'm kind of less culturally active in the mainstream culture
than
a lot of...
You're more guarded with that stuff.
Yes,
right?
So that's the only social media that I have. And I basically have it because it's the one that all of my friends have.
Right.
And it's the one that is easiest to kind of, like, quickly look through, I guess. Like, it's really, really easy to see exactly what's happening really quickly.
So you like the layout of it better.
Yeah, the layout is really easy to just kind of get easy access to everything.
Now, Dad, we were at dinner the other night, and she was talking about a friend of a friend. And I'm guessing, being the social media savvy guy that you are, you've probably had this happen to you before, too, that she could remember the person's Instagram handle, but she couldn't remember this poor girl's name.
Well, you know where I find out about my movies?
I think Mom tells you what to see.
No, yeah, the LA Times.
You're going to have to explain what the LA Times is, Dad.
It's a newspaper.
What? I've
taken this newspaper for almost 50 years.
On
Thursdays, they review the new movies.
Well,
that still happens?
That does still happen.
I didn't know that.
That's the generational divide there, the difference between the LA Times and Instagram.
Yeah. I didn't know that still existed.
It does.
Trust me, I exist and the LA Times exists.
Well, I know you do.
So, Dad, so LA Times is your go-to source for that kind of stuff.
Yes.
Now, Mom told the story when she was on about going to Star Wars. Was there anything that you remember about that that was even more embarrassing that she remembered, or did she? You think she nailed that?
No, she nailed that pretty good. In fact, if you look in the dictionary, there is no such word as bad-o.
Is bad-o and neato, those aren't words?
No.
Okay.
No such word as bad-o.
Now, let me ask you if you remember this. So, for Christmas 1981, I asked for an Intellivision. Do you remember what I actually received?
No, I don't.
I received a computer instead.
Was that the Radio Shack?
It was. A TRS-80 color computer. And that actually worked out pretty well for me, given that I've made the last 25 years in the software industry. But you always give yourself a bad time for not having very good math skills. But tell the people what you did with that computer in an age when we didn't have spreadsheets. What did you use it for?
Probably picking horses at horse racing.
You did. So you wrote a program in BASIC that would help you determine who you thought would win horse races. So it was a really early computer model that you wrote yourself in BASIC. This is where I get this. So we do have other folks who are into horse racing, specifically Phil's Fun Flicks, who writes the Monday articles. He lives in Louisville, and he's really into horse racing. So, Dad, how did that work? What numbers were you trying to get to help you extrapolate what might happen in an actual race?
Well, I buy a racing form, and they have all the past performances of how the horses did. And right now I put it on a spreadsheet and try to predict the winner. But just like when I had the Radio Shack computer, it still doesn't work very well.
So you're still due at the track, is what you're saying?
Yes, I am due. I'm due to win at the track.
Now, if I remember correctly, it did pretty well up until the quarter pole, and then things fell apart. Like, you could tell the brakes; those were easy to predict. But it was after that that the dynamics of the racing started to break down the models. Am I remembering that right?
Well, and see, one of the big problems is, just like with human beings, horses, they can't tell you how they feel.
Right.
So you might have the best horse statistically, but they don't feel good that day and they don't run very well.
Right.
So that makes it a challenge.
Well, in Fantasy Movie League, one of the things I used to say at the beginning when I first started doing this podcast, no movie blows an ACL on Saturday and then can't perform on Sunday. So it's a little bit different than other sort of sports-based predictive things where you've got some data to work on, but it's human behavior, but you're going to get some kind of return on Sunday. You just don't necessarily know what it is.
Right.
So you have those things to worry about. Now, daughter, let me ask you.
Yes.
So we just had your favorite event of the year on Sunday in the Tonys.
Yes, we did.
Right? We had a little Tony party
here.
Movie musicals, we get, you know, one or two of those every once in a while, right?
Yes.
What's your favorite movie musical?
I'm actually not as big of a fan as of the more recent ones.
Okay.
I find that kind of the way that modern movies are made to be less of a production and to seem more real kind of clashes with the artistic style of live theater.
Because when you're in a live theater, you know you're in a live theater, so there's certain beliefs you're willing to suspend as opposed to in a movie where things have to be more real.
Exactly. So my favorites tend to be the older ones, probably my favorite one being Singin' in the Rain, which I saw first when I was about 8 or 9, I think.
Okay.
And I really like that one.
Now, Dad, when you were 14, that was your favorite movie musical, too, right?
Yes, it probably was.
How about you, Dad? What are some favorite movies of yours before we get you guys out of here?
Sound of Music. That's my number one.
That's pretty good, too. You cannot beat Julie Andrews.
Well, now, speaking of, let me ask the two of you. So it was announced a week or two ago that they're doing a sequel now to Mary Poppins. So you just mentioned Julie Andrews,
yes,
and
I
Dad,
did.
You just mentioned Sound of Music. Thoughts about remaking that and what challenges they might have in sort of trying to capture that original magic?
Who's that for me?
Whoever, either one
or
of
no.
you. So Dad, why don't you go
first? Go ahead, Grandpa.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, Grandfather. Yeah. I think that, first of all, there is no one as charming and with as beautiful voice as Julie Andrews. I really like Emily Blunt, but she can't beat Julie Andrews. I'm sorry. No one can. And I think that, maybe that kind of with what we were talking about the suspension of disbelief of that the art form has kind of lessened over the years, it might be a little bit harder to give that classic, this is all fake and you know that you're, it's a suspension of disbelief thing like you were talking about. I think that it's going to be kind of hard to just get that classic feel, but, Lin-Manuel Miranda, for those of you who don't know,
people who listen to this know Lin-Manuel Miranda because they know
never mind,
I name drop Lin-Manuel Miranda
good.
A lot.
Good.
So Deb, what do you think? The original Mary Poppins, actually, I believe it had its original premiere at the Chinese Theater back in, I think that's 1960.
Are you talking Mary Poppins or Sound of Music?
Yeah, Mary Poppins.
Oh, okay.
It was like 60 or 61. What do you think about the remake here or the sequel they're doing?
Well, when the first one was done so well, I don't think it's a good idea to make a remake. Now, I love the movie that is about
Saving Mr. Banks. Saving Mr. Banks. Yeah.
I did too.
I thought that was terrific, and that was about that author that made that movie. But I think that would be a better idea than try to remake a classic.
Well, there you go. So two thumbs down. We're hearing out. Next time Disney's going to, you know, approve a movie, I'll make sure the two of you get CC'd on that. Now, Dad, you won't see that when I CC it because it won't be in the LA Times. I'll be sure to put like a classified ad there for you. But I'll make sure.
if it's out there, it's the LA Times.
Okay. And I'll make sure they find it on your Instagram feed.
Oh, okay? Thanks.
All right.
Okay.
Well, thank you both for joining me.
You're welcome.
Thanks for going a little easy on me. And maybe we'll have you on again later.
All right. Terrific. Thank you very much for calling.
Bye.
So, Patrick, I have to admit, when I had these two on, there's no two people who enjoy busting my chops more collectively than my dad and my daughter. And they didn't really turn on me too much there. I got kind of lucky.
I think they were just doing their job, and it seems like it's a great little bunch you've got there. And I will totally vouch for your dad. There is something called the LA Times. I actually was a subscriber to it. I would have a paper version delivered right to my doorstep. I probably canceled my subscription about 10 years ago, but it still exists, which is good.
Well, it's so funny. You never know where these interviews are going to go. I didn't sort of see either one of them with what I wanted to talk about. And to have my dad bring up newspapers and my daughter bring up Instagram just shows this generational divide, you know, that spans these couple of generations that my daughter didn't. I think she if you see the look on her face, she literally didn't think there were such a things as newspapers anymore.
I think it was like a very cool panel. It's like a panel at the Paley Center talking about old traditional media versus new media. This was solid.
It was just family style and real person style. Absolutely.
Do you think she'd ever go as far as to pick up one of these newspapers?
I don't know. You know, I saved the newspaper. I saved a newspaper from the day she was born, and I don't know that she's ever seen it.
We can prove to her that these things exist. And yeah, do you think your dad's going to be getting on Instagram anytime soon?
Oh, no, not even. One thing that I didn't out him on that I will now is he doesn't even carry his own phone. Whenever you ask him, Dad, why don't you carry your phone? He says, because I'm always with your mother. She's got hers. What do I care?
And he likes to carry light, I guess.
He does. He called me 9 months ago, and my first reaction was, who stole my dad's phone?
It was just shock when he saw his name come up on the display.
So, yeah, he's old school.
They'll find a happy medium there, but that was a cool conversation.
Well, glad. I'm glad you enjoyed it. I hope others did as well. So let's turn our attention to the week at hand here, week four of the summer season. Two highly touted in different ways newcomers in Finding Dory and Central Intelligence have some interesting holdovers, especially now that we've got the professional forecasts in who are looking kindly upon the two sequels that we got new in theaters last week. But I think, you know, the elephant in the room is Finding Dory. Thoughts there on where you think this one's going?
I turned in my column around midday today, and I referred to it as, if I had to bet my life on one film becoming a blockbuster this summer, especially when there's so many question marks out there, like I don't trust Ghostbusters or Tarzan or Independence Day, but Finding Dory's a sure thing. But it is priced so high, like I think it's going to be almost impossible to play it, especially we'll get to Central Intelligence in a little bit. Central Intelligence has a much more reasonable number to reach that if it gets there, then it's almost impossible to play Dory. So it's really hard to like kind of leave that big of a sure thing moneymaker on the table, but I think it's too expensive.
Well, let's lay some stats on the table here. So as we're recording this on Wednesday night, the long range forecast from ProBoxOffice.com, which is what most people sort of begin the week on, for Finding Dory, it started in the low 100s and got up to 133 million this past. They released those on like Friday, Saturday, with a theater count of like 3,900 or so.
Mm-hmm.
To what do you account that rise? Because the original only got 70 million, and that was granted a long time ago in 2003, but there's only been three digitally animated movies to have opening weekends over 100 million. So why do you think that got up to the 130s?
I mean, I was running numbers earlier. Like, if you adjust for inflation, that 70 is right about 100, and it's actually Pixar's biggest domestic grosser if you adjust for inflation. So okay. It's definitely a beloved movie. So, and Toy Story was 110 in 2010. You adjust for inflation there, that's about 120. I think you could argue the original Finding Nemo is probably, like, I don't know if it's more than, but I'd say equally as beloved as the Toy Story franchise. So I think that Toy Story 3 number is like a pretty reasonable place to start, but I think that's just a little high. Because as you mentioned, I think the two Shreks, Minions, and Toy Story 3 are the only movies that have had that. So to really, like, to justify to play it, I think it has to even overperform those numbers, which is kind of crazy to me. It's just too rich for my blood.
Yeah, it's so some people think it could be one of these runaway movies like we saw with Jurassic World last year. And
they're virtually the same movie with different actors. Like, I'll forgive you for that one. That's perfectly understandable.
And even with Minions, to a certain extent, at the end of last summer, right, that is there a ceiling to Dory? And I think that's what's been driving a lot of the chatter conversation, is it could go so high that it could completely blow everything out and you'd feel sorry for not playing it. But if you kind of put your reasonable
hat on, is it
going to
make that much more than Toy Story 3 just 6 years ago? Like, granted, the original's beloved. I don't know if it's that beloved. I think it's probably going to be the biggest grossing movie of the summer, possibly all of 2016, but I just don't see the opening getting quite that high.
How much of a wild card? I haven't seen people mention this in the chatter a whole lot, but how much of a wild card do you think Ellen's popularity might be here? She's a lot more popular right now than she was in 2003. Do you think that has any effect on this at all, or do you think it's just this is the sequel to a cool Pixar movie that everybody loves?
I think it can move the needle a little bit, not like a massive amount, but again, like, she's on 5 days a week, which is just great promo for the movie every day. So compared to like her popularity level in 2003, it's much higher now. So I think it'll help a little bit, but I don't even know what the number is, but it'll definitely help a little bit.
Well, I have tables in my article this week. Before we get to my tables, let's talk about the other movie that we're comparing against here, which is Central Intelligence. So its long-range forecast was at $35 million, and its average comes out to about that of the weekly forecasts that came out a little bit earlier in the day. It's looking to have a theater count at around 3,100 or so. The thing that's starting to bother people is, Patrick, why don't you think there's any Rotten Tomatoes scores on this right now? Why have they held reviews?
That's probably my biggest concern about the movie, is that the reviews have been embargoed, which is never a good sign, which means the movie's probably not that good, because if it was good, Warner Brothers would want to get it out there and get some word of mouth going. But it's not scaring me away that much, because if you look at Kevin Hart's body of work, of all the movies that he's had a starring role in, only one of them has a positive Rotten Tomatoes score, which was About Last Night, which was at a 69% fresh. Everything else, like, just bad reviews across the board. He's kind of become the new Adam Sandler. He appears to be critic-proof, so I think his audience is still going to come out for this.
Right. And buddy movie, so you get two audiences for the price of one here, right? The long-range forecast for this movie started in the 50s and moved its way down, and I would think that that, and it's even quoted in the original, if you go back and look at the older long-range forecasts, and I'm going to have a link to this in my article that's going to come on Thursday. San Andreas, about this time last year, did $54 million with Dwayne Johnson's face on the poster.
And I think, again, you're bringing in Kevin Hart's like following, you're bringing in Dwayne Johnson's fans, and both of these guys have like very significant social media followings. I gotta think, like, it's gotta be able to get into the 30s. And if you look at Kevin Hart, his last six starring roles where he's been the lead have averaged $31 million. I gotta think, like, you know, with Dwayne Johnson, with the June, like, you know, like prime summer release date, and June, like, buddy comedies in recent years have done very well, like The Heat, Get Smart, 22 Jump Street, like Spy last year, which is like right around $30 million. I think it's going to get there with both fan bases.
So here's my first table for you. So basically, what we're trying to weigh here is: do you play Dory, or do you play three or four screens of Central Intelligence?
So I was playing around with the comparator quite a bit about this one to see, like, you know, if I think Central Intelligence is going to make this, how high does Dory have to get? I'm sure you've got that all worked out.
So I got three values for you. If Central Intelligence makes $35 million, Dory needs to make $138 million in order for it to be of greater value. If Central Intelligence gets to $40 million, Dory needs to get up to 158. And if Central Intelligence, which even I don't think this will happen, gets up to that original long-range forecast, more like 50 million, Dory would have to get 200 million. And that scenario is probably not happening on either end. But those other two numbers, I mean, do you think Central Intelligence gets to 35?
I would not be shocked at 35 at all. Like, if you look at Kevin Hart's last few, that's right around where Get Hard like debuted, and that was an R-rated movie like coming out in the spring. This is a better release date. I think at this point, like, Dwayne Johnson's just as good of, if not a better co-star than Will Ferrell in terms of box office. And like I said earlier, like, June buddy comedies, like, going back a ways, like, you know, The Heat, Get Smart, 22 Jump Street, Spy, like, I think 35 is very attainable. Like, 40, I wouldn't be stunned. That's a little bit higher, but like that 50, like, I don't see that happening. But 35 or 40, why not?
So let's assume 35 here for a minute. So
35 seems like a good base.
So in order for Dory to beat Central Intelligence at 35, Dory has to get to 138. So I think more so than most weeks, people are going to need to look at the Thursday night preview numbers when it comes to be Friday morning. And I like the comp that you just mentioned for Central Intelligence. So Get Hard did $1.8 million. It's opening Thursday on the way to $33.8 million for the full weekend.
That was in March.
And there's another wrench in here. Do you know what starts at 9 p.m. Eastern on Thursday night?
It's probably going to be exactly what I'll be watching, as I'm going to hopefully watch the Golden State Warriors close out the Cleveland Cavaliers in the NBA Finals. But so I think that's exactly Central Intelligence's prime audience. Like, a lot of them might be watching the NBA Finals, which has been doing very well ratings-wise this year. But like, unless that number is really low, like, I'm going to be monitoring it very closely.
Yeah, so I think that's the ballpark number you should be looking for Friday morning, is that 1.8 million. Because if you're thinking Central Intelligence can get to 35, you know, Get Hard got to 34 on 1.8. So if it's somewhere in the 1.8 to 1.5, Central Intelligence is probably on its way to 35. So if that happens, here's the second table I have, new table I have this week in my article. If that happens, what does Dory's Thursday night number have to be in order to it to project to 38 million? And here's where you get murkier, because the movies that are targeted at kids and families, they tend to not have bigger Thursday night numbers, and the ones that do vary quite a bit. So let me read you four numbers here. So Minions, it had a $6.2 million Thursday and a full weekend of $115.7 million. So 5.4% of its total weekend take was the Thursday number. So for Inside Out, that number was 4.1%. For Toy Story 3, it was 3.6%. And the more recent Zootopia, which granted is not a Pixar movie, but still a highly successful Disney digital animation, it only got 2.3% of its full weekend on Thursday. So if you map out those numbers to what Dory would need, the Zootopia, if you're using Zootopia as your comp, if Dory gets 3.1 million, it still might be on the road to 138 million. If you use the high number in that table, which is Minions, that's a Dory number of about 7.4 million. So if we get a Thursday night number when we get reporting on Friday morning that Dory's number is north of 7 million, then Dory's probably the way to go. But there's a big murky area here in between 3 and 7 million where you're just not going to know.
Again, family movies, I mean, they do the bulk of their business on Saturday. So that's why I'm really hoping that Central Intelligence number like at least starts with a 2, hopefully even more. Oh, yeah. And that'll make it an easy decision. But we'll see how that plays out. But definitely monitor the Thursday numbers.
Now, what do you think about the holdovers here? I was really surprised to see both Now You See Me and The Conjuring sequels get forecasted by the pros as highly as they did.
I mean, if you look at the first Conjuring, it dropped, I believe, about 47% exactly. In its second week, which yeah. For a horror movie is fantastic. And then, like, I was running some numbers earlier. Like, if it keeps its drop to, I think, 52% or less, like, that's a potential, like, could find itself in the bonus hunt. Could it also drop 55% or more, like most horror movies? Always. But I think The Conjuring, it's a little bit, like, I think it crosses over a little bit more. So I could see that happening. And I think with Now You See Me, the original movie got off to a pretty modest start and then just held up very well. So I think that's kind of what the thinking is on that number.
Well, so the pros are predicting only a 30% drop for Now You See Me 2, which would make it the clear runaway best performer if that ends up happening. Its predecessor,
which I think that's way too low.
Well, I do too. So its predecessor dropped 35% in a pretty non-competitive weekend. If you go look at that weekend, its second week.
Whereas this weekend is packed.
It is. But if you play around with the comparator a little bit, if it even gets a 42% drop and all the other forecasts stay as is, it's still best performer.
I'm giving it some real consideration here. Like, I was between The Conjuring and Now You See Me 2 for, like, my bonus pick. I, like, just was looking at the comps from the previous one. I lean towards The Conjuring, but I wouldn't be shocked if Now You See Me 2 pulls that off.
So I still think you need to decide, and I think largely based on the Thursday numbers, whether you want to go with Central Intelligence or Dory. That Dory number for me has got to be above 7 for me to go with Dory, and it could happen. But it'd be much better if the Central Intelligence number is above 2, like you said, that makes it a much easier decision. And then it's just a matter of what mix of The Conjuring and Now You See Me 2 might you want to have.
I'm really hoping that Central Intelligence number is big just so I can have a more pleasant Friday morning. It'll just make things easier.
Now, one more holdover to ask you about, and that's Alice again, which I was hating on last week. But one of the theories I know Ari talks about in the chatter is the drive-in effect.
Which also, like, again, when you have a movie as big as Finding Dory, it's going to be paired up with Alice at drive-ins, however many are left throughout the country. And that could give it a slight little bump. So it's definitely in play.
So that's another thing to think about when you're looking at those kind of mid to low fillers. I mean, Alice is in the 20s price-wise. It's not certainly in the single digits with some of the low-end fillers. But consider that when you're looking at this stuff this next week as well.
I mean, Alice came through for me last week. I don't know if I can trust it 2 weeks in a row. That seems like playing like fire.
Well, you could go to a drive-in and try to boost it yourself.
I live in a pretty major city. I couldn't tell you where the nearest drive-in is.
Well, Google can.
Probably, but like, my God, how far do I got to go for that? Who knows?
It's probably a ways, yeah. All right. Well, I think that's going to do it here for week 4 of the Fantasy Movie League summer season podcast. You can find me, as always, on Twitter at NerdGuru. Patrick, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter at TheBoxOfficeGuy.
And please, go check out the bracket contest that Patrick has going on. You can find your Fantasy Movie League gear, as always, at FantasyMovieLeagueShop.com. You can find the league itself on Twitter at FML_movies and on Facebook if you just do a search on Fantasy Movie League. Good luck to everybody and another tough week. Until next week.
This has been the Fantasy Movie League podcast. Come join us and play for free in public leagues or against your friends at FantasyMovieLeague.com.